Today's share in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Kesubos, Daf Memches. We begin on Memches of Aleph, about six lines down at the two dots. And we're continuing to darshan the Pasuk, Im Acheres Yikach Lo, She'ra, Ksusa, Yonasa, Lo Yigra. What are the definitions of She'ra, Ksusa, Yonasa? We gave a number of definitions to this yesterday, and we begin at the two dots, Memches of Aleph, six lines from the top, with the words, Tani Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef taught the following brisa, and he said, She'era, the word She'era in the Pasuk, is a reference to Zu Kerev Basur, that the husband has an obligation to be close with his wife, to physically have their bodies come into contact with each other. Not like what the Persians did. Shelo Yinag Bo Minag Parsiim, Shemishamshim Mitosam Bilvushem. And not to do the custom that the Persians had, the Parsiim, that the people would have relations while they were clothed. In other words, there has to be Kerev Basur. It has to be this concept of the flesh touching each other and not while they're fully wearing clothing. Similarly, Mesaile Rav Huna, this is in accord with what Rav Huna said. What did Rav Huna say? Rav Huna, Haomer, if a person says, Efshi, it's impossible for me to have relations with my wife, Elo ani b'vigdi v'hi b'vigda, that I need to be clothed and she needs to be clothed and then I can have relations with her, but if we're not fully clothed, then I can't have relations with her, so then that's as if he's causing the marriage to dissolve, so she can demand the divorce. Obviously, if they both are happy with this, that's a different story. But here, in this situation, she says she wants Kiruv Basar, so then Yotzi, he has to divorce her if she demands that. Then no sin Ksuba, and she's not considered the cause of the divorce, and therefore she can demand the Ksuba. If a woman refuses to have relations with her husband, so then she normally would be considered a rebellious wife, and therefore would not be entitled to a Ksuba. But here, he's the one that's causing the problem, and therefore she would be entitled to a divorce and have her kesuba. Gemara continues and quotes the Mishnah. We had the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Omer that Rabbi Yehuda seemed to disagree with the Tanna Kamma, and he said that no, afilu oni should be Yisrael v'chule. He said even a person who's a very poor man, even an oni should be Yisrael, has a certain obligation to make sure that the funeral for his wife, if one of the sons, if she were to pass away, is at least hiring people to play the flute and to have a woman to do the various dirges at the funeral. This would increase the mourning, and this is the proper cover for a wife. And he says even the poorest person in Israel has to go and support this for his wife. Now, that implies that there's a machlokas over here between the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says the poorest person, I feel only should be so, has to do this, implying that the Tanna Kamma doesn't. We call the Tanna Kamma sover hani lo. Tanna Kamma doesn't require this. Now, how could that possibly be? Hey, chidami, what are we talking about that the Tanna Kamma would disagree with Rabbi Yehuda? If you're telling me, Idar Ha, if this was the custom in her family, this was the normal way that they would mourn somebody in her family, so then why would the Tanna Kamma say that the husband doesn't have the obligation to go and provide that type of mourning support at the funeral for his wife? My time with the Tanna Kamma, then below, how could the Tanna Kamma disagree with Rabbi Yehuda? If that's the normal way the women in her family, Rechmon al-Salam, they pass away, that's the normal mourning process, so why would the Tanna Kamma disagree with Rabbi Yehuda that you have to have that minimal amount of financial support for that type of the flute players and the woman singing the dirges at the funeral? So my time with the Tanna Kamma, don't know, how could he possibly say no? You're going to tell me, vi de la barcha, and it's not the normal way in her family to do that? So then why would Rabbi Yehuda insist that the husband has to supply that? My time with Rabbi Yehuda. So again, it doesn't seem to make any sense. The Gemara says it does make a lot of sense. Lo tzricha, the machlokas over here is, and Rabbi Yehuda's statement is needed for the situation, kigon d'orchei d'idei, v'lav orcho d'ido, that his family does have that level of mourning at it, whereas her family did not. So who do we go by, his family or her family? So the Tanna Kamma savar, that normally the rule is that the wife rises to the husband's social, financial status, and she wouldn't ever go down to his social status, his financial status, if she was higher. So it's a win-win situation for her. She can only go up, but she can't go down. But that's while she's alive. The Tanna Kamma holds, Sagar, Ki Amrinan, that rule that we have, that Ola Imo, that the wife goes up to the financial status of her husband, if he is in a better financial status than her family, so she rises to his family standards of what's acceptable in terms of financial dealings. But if she's on a higher level, then she doesn't sink to his level. She stays at her higher level. But that, the Tanna Kamma says, is only during her lifetime. Hani mili michayim. While she's alive, she gets the benefits of going up to his financial status, but if she's on a higher financial status, she doesn't lose it. But the Tanna Kamma says, Avoli achar misa, but Rachmana Litzlan, after she dies, then she goes back to her family status. So if her family status is higher, so then she would be entitled to it. But if her family status was lower, they normally wouldn't have the flutes, and they wouldn't have the woman singing dirges in her family, so then, low, then she doesn't have an entitlement to that. Of course, her husband can do whatever he wants, but she doesn't have an entitlement. They can't demand that there be the flutes and the dirge singer at her levaya. That's the Tanna Kamma's opinion. Yehuda disagrees. Yehuda says, no, she stays on the elevated status even in death. If Yehuda suffer, afilu liachamisa, even after death, she's entitled to be at his financial status and not go back down to her lower financial status if that was the case. How do we pass him? So the Gemara says, Amar Chista, Amar Mokwa, Halachi Rav Yehuda. Rav Chista says the name of Amar Mokwa, that we pass him like Rav Yehuda, that even in death, she doesn't lose her higher financial status that she had with him. It's not only during her lifetime that she goes up and doesn't go down, but even in death, she stays up and doesn't go down back to her status. Okay, now once we had one statement from Chista Marikvas, we have another statement. Another statement that they said was, Misha Nishtata, based in Yordun Lechosov. If Rachmana Lislan, a husband, becomes a shota, he never has a psychiatric breakdown, he's no longer considered mentally competent, no, what do you do with the support for his wife and his children? He has properties, he has all sorts of financial resources, but he's not able to wield them because he's never a shota. So in this situation, the Beis Din will take over his financial affairs, they'll be Yordun Lechosov, they'll appoint a person, a guardian, to go and run his financial affairs to support the wife and the daughter. V'donin u'mefarnes in esishto u'banov u'vnosov v'dover acher. And the Beis Din will appoint somebody, an apotropos, some sort of a guardian, to go and manage the affairs for him. Nebuch, that this guy is crazy and he's not able to go and manage his own affairs. So the Beis Din will appoint somebody to go and be mefarnes in esishto, to go and take care of the financial needs of his wife and his children, banov u'vnosov, his sons and his daughters, and also to pay for v'dover acher. In a moment, the Gemara is going to explain, there's a machlokas of what this Dover Acher is. It's either going to be tachshitim, various types of makeup and perfumes and other needs, tachshitim, adornments that his wife might have, jewelry. And the other opinion of Dover Acher is that it means to take care of his staka obligations. So when we get to that in a moment, we'll explain exactly what this really means, this Dover Acher. But for right now, that's the statement, the Rechista said in the name of Mar Okva, that when a person, Nebuch, is incapable of taking care of his own financial affairs because he became crazy, he's no longer Bar Das. So basically will come in and step in and take care of the financial needs of the wife, as well as the children, as well as to provide this Dover Acher. Ravina disagrees. Only Ravina Ravashi. Ravina says to Ravashi, why? Why is this any different than the case that we learned in the following Brisa, where the Beis Din doesn't provide financial support for the children or Dover Acher? So he says, Maishno meha de Tanya, why is it any different than the following price? Where it says, Misha alach l'medina sayam, v'ishto tovas mizonos. A man goes off on a business trip and he did not leave behind instructions as to how to financially support his family. So the woman says, listen, I have nothing to eat. And she goes to the Beis Din and she's tovas mizonos. She says, "New, set up a set amount of money that I can have from his estate because I have nothing to eat. And he didn't leave us with financial resources. He has financial resources, but he didn't apportion them to us, and he's off on this business trip. He's off in Medina Sayyam. We can't contact him." So what does Beis Din do with that situation? So Beis Din, Yordan Lechosov, Beis Din does go appoint an apotropos. Beis Din looks into the financial matters and sets up mizonos for the wife. Mizonin u'mefarnes in his ishto. They do set up financial support to give the wife food. However, not for the children. Avolo bonov uvnosov and velo dover acher. But they don't do anything else. They just support the wife, and they don't support the children, the boys or the girls, and they don't provide for this dover acher. So Ravina is asking to Ravashi, why should there be a difference between a person who Nebuch goes crazy and a person who's off in the Medina Sayyam? Aren't they both the same scenario, that the husband has not set up support for his family? So why only in the case of Nishtate do they support the entire family and Dover Acher? But in the case of he went off to the Medina Sayyam when he's not here, we only support the wife, but we don't support the children or the Dover Acher. That's the question that Ravina asked. And Ravashi says, Amalei, no, there's a clear difference over here. Below, shiny look, don't you see the difference between Yotzei Ladas, a person who voluntarily leaves to go off on the business trip, and chose not to leave any financial means for his family, including his children and the Dover Acher, as opposed to the person who was a fully competent person. Let's say then he got his zets on the head, or he just had a psychiatric breakdown. And don't you see the difference between a Yotzi Ladas, the guy going off on a business trip, Yotzi Shalom Ladas, as opposed to the guy that went crazy without having any preparation beforehand, that he would know that he would go crazy and he didn't have the opportunity to take care of the financial relations for his family. So therefore, that's what Rav Ashi says to Ravina. There's a difference between the two. In the case where the guy went crazy, Mishanishtata, so in that situation, he had no forewarning, he had no knowledge to set something up. So therefore, the Beis Din assumes that the normal person would want to set up not only for his wife, who he's obligated to support, but also for the children. Even though he's not obligated to support them, Mistam, he wants to take care of them. And Mistam, he also wants to take care of the Dover Acher. As opposed to the guy going on a business trip, he made a conscious decision, I ain't leaving any instructions how to support them financially. So the wife, who is obligated for him to support her, he has to support his wife. That's part of the Tanaim of the Ksuba, that he will go and support her. So the Basin says, whether you want to or not, you have to support your wife. So if you're a nasty guy and you didn't set up any support for her, we're going to go set it up on your behalf. But the children, as strange as it may sound, he has no obligation financially to support his children. Again, most fathers do, but there's no financial requirement that basically can say, listen, we're going into your estate and going to support your children. So therefore, in the case of the guy going off to Medina Sayam, the basically doesn't have the authority to do anything other than support the wife, who he was obligated to support, but Lav Davka, the children, he's not obligated to support, and certainly he's not obligated to support the Dover Acher. Okay, so that's the understanding of the difference between Misha Nishtata and Misha Lach Lamdina Sayam. Now the Gemara asks, what is this Dover Acher? My Dover Acher. So as I mentioned, there's two opinions. Ruchista, Amar Ruchista holds that Tachshit. This is talking about various types of, Rashi explains Tachshit as Besomim Shal Avkas Rocha, the various types of perfumes and makeup that you get from the peddlers. Shanoshim Ishkashtot, and they adorn themselves with these types of jewelry or spices and perfumes, etc. Alternatively, Rav Yosef Omar, it's tzedaka, that a man has an obligation to give tzedaka. So therefore, the Beis Din would either, according to Rav Chista Omar Ravukva, in the case of Nishtata, provide tzedaka, and according to the brisa that Ravina brought down, the Misha Lach Medina Sayam, so the Beis Din wouldn't supply this Dover Acher. So now, the next piece of Gemara, Rashi has two ways to understand it. The first way to understand it is that it's going on the statement that Ravina made to Rav Ashi, the Brisa of Halacha Medina Sayam. And the other way that Rashi says, seemingly his preferred way, is that it's going on the statement that Rav Chista Amar Ma'ukva said about Misha Nishtata. So we'll learn the way Rashi first brings it down, which is going on the second part, which is going on the Brisa for Ravina. So Mandi Amar Tachshit, according to the opinion of Rav Chista, who says that Dover Acher means Tachshit, so in a situation where you have no obligation, in the Brisa where it says, there is no based in only Zonim, Farnas, and Sishto, but Lo Bodo Vavnosov, and not Dover Acher, so if the opinion of Rav Chista is that the Dover Acher is Tachshit, so certainly, if you don't have to do Tachshitin, which is a more basic need, since Kol Shekein Tzedakah, then certainly the Beis Din isn't going to go and take care of his Tzedakah needs. Now, the understanding behind this is because this guy's in the Medina Sayam, who says he's not giving Tzedakah over there? He's giving his Maaser Ksofim, he's giving his 10% in the Medina Sayam. We have no knowledge that he's not. The Tachshitim, he's clearly not. But if there's no obligation for Tachshitim, we certainly aren't going to give an obligation for him to give Tzedakah. That would be Rav Chista's understanding of Tachshit, and certainly not Tzedakah. Whereas the Mandi Omar Rav Yosef, who says Tzedakah, so yeah, okay, Beis Din isn't going to go into his finances here and make a gift Tzedakah. For all we know, he's giving that Tzedakah already in the Midian Sayyam. But Aval Tachshit, which is essential need of his wife, no difference than Mefarnesin, that you have to give her food, so then Aval Tachshit, Yavin Law, the Lo Nicha Le Dinis Nabal, because he doesn't want to come back and find that his wife is a Menovel, that she didn't have any of the Tachshitim, and she looks so much less attractive than all the other women. So therefore, that's included, according to Rav Yosef, in the, what based in it would be Mefarnesin and Sishto, that would include the Tachshitim, albeit Rav Yosef says it doesn't include Tzedakah. So Rav Chista would say it includes neither, not the Tachshitim, and certainly not the Tzedakah. Rav Yosef would say it doesn't include Tzedakah, but it would include Tachshitim. That's the first way Rashi understands it, that it's going on the Brisa. However, Rashi says his preferred way of understanding it is that it goes on the statement that Rav Chista made in the name of Mar Ukva, that when he's nishtata, so they in fact do provide the dover acher. So here Rashi learns it the other way. He says, according to Rav Chisda, who says tachshitim, it's only tachshitim, but lav dafkut, it's staka. Whereas according to Rav Yossi, who says it's a staka, certainly it also means a tachshitim. So the exact opposite way of understanding it. Gemara continues and tells us, Amar Rav Chiya bar Rav, Amar Rav Huna, Rav Chiya bar Rav said, Amar Rav Huna, Mi sholach lemedina sayam. If a person goes off on a business trip, he's out in a different part of the world, and Nebuch, Humeisa, Ishto, and his wife passes away, so in that situation, Beis Din Yordan L'Chosav, the Kovrin Osol L'Fi Chodo, Beis Din will go and take care of the funeral expenses for the wife from his properties, from his estate, and they will bury her L'Fi Chodo, on the level that he is. So Gemara questions and says, only on his level, let's say she's on a high level, and not on her level. So Gemara says, no, that's what it means. Ema af lufi kvodo, that if he's on a higher level, they'll bury her on his level. If she's on a higher level, they'll bury her on her level. And this is what we just learned a few minutes ago. Hakum ha'ashvalon, o lo imo v'eno, he read this imo, v'afilu lachami. So this goes like the opinion that says, even in death, like Rabbi Yehuda, who said we paskin like, even in death, we elevate her status to the point of whichever one is higher. If her status was higher, then it goes l'fi kvoda. If his status was higher, then it goes l'fi kvoda. So this statement from Ruchia bar Rav and Amar Vuna is in accord with the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, which is how we say we paskin. Mark continues says, Amar Rav Masna said, Omer, if a man says, now, Rashi, without Rashi, how can you understand these Gemaras? So Rashi tells us, Ha'omer, this is talking about a Shchid Meirah, B'shas Misaso, a man on his deathbed says, Im Meisa, when my wife dies, now he's going to predecease her. So he's saying that you're going to pay the ksuba to my wife now when I die. So therefore, I don't want the rest of my estate, which is now going to be in the hands of my children, to have to go and pay for her burial expenses. She's getting the ksuba, that's for her burial expenses as well. And therefore, don't take it from my estate. In Mesa, when my wife dies, after I die, the man says, Lo tikberua minichasov. Don't go and bury her with my properties. In other words, I don't want to pay for the funeral. I'm paying the ksuba. The guy says after he dies, he's going to pay the ksuba from his estate. And therefore, that's it. Our financial connection is done. And therefore, I want the rest of my estate to go to my children. And when she passes away, I may have the assume they don't have to pay for her funeral expenses. And the Gemara says, Shomen lo. This is in fact legitimate. What Rav Masna is saying is perfectly allowable, that the man doesn't have to pay for her funeral after he's given her the ksuba. The Gemara says, obviously not. My shno ki omar. What difference does it make if he says this or he doesn't say this? The bottom line is, he pays off her ksuba, the nofli nixi kame yasme, and the rest of his estate goes to his children. They go to the yisomim, they go to his orphan now children. So, ki lo omar, if he doesn't say this statement, I don't want her to be buried from my properties, nami, nixi kame yasme rabu, the nechosim by the yisomim. Why would you have a hava meaning to think that his estate should still pay for her funeral expenses after he's paid off the ksuba? The ksuba is the monies that she's supposed to live off of, and Nebuch, when she passes away, that's going to support her funeral. So Gemara says, you're 100% right, that's not what Rav Masna said. Elo, this is what Rav Masna said. If a man says on his deathbed, Omer, this Shchiv Mira says on his deathbed, Im Meisui, this guy says, when I pass away, this person says, I don't want my estate to have to pay for my funeral expenses. I'm giving all my money to my kids now, mechayim, and therefore I'll be destitute. And then the local chevra kaddisha is going to have to go and arrange my funeral expenses and not come from my estate. Lo tikberuhu minachosav. He's saying, when I pass away, I don't want my estate to bury me. My estate I'm giving away essentially to my children now. Therefore, I'm dying destitute, and let the Chevra Kadisha pay for my funeral. So in this situation, Rav Masna says, Ein Shomelo, we don't listen to this guy. He has no right to go and enrich his children and to enrich his estate at the expense of the local Kupas Tztaka, the expense of the local Chevra Kadisha having to pick up the tab for his funeral. Lav kol heimenu, he doesn't have the right, Shiyashu is bona, to enrich his children, and to be destitute and throw himself at the mercy of the Chevra Kadisha to go pay for his funeral expenses. He doesn't have the right to do that. Nebuch, if a person has no estate, he has no money, so then it is the responsibility of the community to go and bury the person. However, a guy is a wealthy guy, and he says, listen, all my money is given to my children, and he dies technically without a penny to his name, then that's not right, and therefore he doesn't have the right to do that. The estate will have to go and pay for his funeral expenses, even though technically the money belongs to the orphans and doesn't belong to him anymore. Okay, next Mishnah. Mishnah tells us, Li olam hi b'rishus av. this girl who is being married off by the father remains in the father's rishus, remains under the father's protection, under his rishus, until ad shetikanes, who return to memches and mebeis lerishus habal lenisum, until she actually enters into the rishus of her husband. At that point in time, she's no longer under the rishus of her father, and now she falls under the rishus of her husband, and the deedim that we talked about in the previous shiurim would then become applicable. Until she goes actually into nisuin with her husband, she remains either fully or at least partially under the domain of her father. Now, Mishnah tells us, what happens if the father gave her over to the shluchim of the husband? So is that considered giving her over to the husband? Mishnah will say yes. So that's considered as she was already in the Rishus of the Baal, even though seemingly there hasn't yet been Nisuin. Nevertheless, once she's handed over to the Shluchim of the Baal, as if she's been handed over to the Baal, and she leaves her father's Rishus, and she goes into her husband's Rishus. Similarly, but if the father accompanies her with the Shluchim of the Baal, so then it's not called giving over into the Shluchim of the Baal, not called giving over into the Rishus of her husband. Or, he doesn't go, but he sends his shluchim to go, im shluchei ha'bal, so that's also not considered giving over to Rishus of the Baal. And in both of these scenarios, where the husband accompanies them, or the shluchim of the father accompany the girl to her new husband's house, harehi Rishus Av, she remains in the Rishus of the father for all the dinim that we mentioned previously. However, once the shluchim and the father do in fact hand her over to the shluchim and the baal, or of course to the baal, then harehi b'rishus habaal. Then she is considered in the rishus of the husband for all the dinim that we've talked about. The Gemara starts off and says, the beginning of the Mishnah says, li'olam. What does that mean, li'olam? It said, li'olam hi b'rishus ha'av. What does that mean? So, my li'olam, what does it mean? Li'olam hi b'rishus ha'av. Ad shetikonis l'rishus ha'bal l'nisuin. So what does that mean? So the Gemara says, this is teaching us a din that is negating a Mishnah known as a Mishnah Rishonah that we're going to learn, as Rashi points out, on in the next Perek, in Perek Afalpi, on Daf Nun Zayin. And what it tells us over there is, lafuki b'mishnah Rishonah, ditnan, it says over there on Daf Nun Zayin, that higiyaz zman v'lo nisu. We mentioned many, many times now in learning Masechta Yevamos and learning now Masechta's Kesuvos, almost halfway through it, that their custom was that the Erusin and the Nisuin didn't occur at the same time. There would be up to a year apart to allow the woman and the husband to go and prepare the house for their future wedding and life together. So the Erusin would occur 1 year prior to the Nisuin. And during this period of time, they would prepare for their life together. But once that year is up, Higiyazman velo nisu, but the husband hasn't yet taken her into nisuin. The year is up, everything should have been prepared, and now he's still not taking her into nisuin. So at that point in time, she no longer, the Mishnah tells us, is ocheles from her father's house, instead, ochlos mishalo. These women who have now passed the year point in time from their erusin are now forced to be sustained by that husband, even though he hasn't done the nisuin. And in fact, if he's a Kohen, they're now allowed to eat v'ochlus b'truma. They can eat truma. Now, mid'oraisa, as we learned already in Yevamos, mid'oraisa, as soon as it's erusin, she's technically allowed to eat truma. But there was a concern that since she's not living yet with her husband, so she's going to go to her future husband's house, or her erusin husband's house. The first stage of marriage has occurred, and he's going to give her, you know, some food to take back home on the trip, and he's going to be truma. She's going to go back to her house, and her sibling is going to say, oh, what did your chassan give you? Oh, it's some cake. Oh, could we have it? And she's going to give it to him, and that's truma. And they're not allowed to eat truma. So therefore, the rabbis instituted the gezeira, don't allow her to eat truma until she's actually living with him. But here the Mishnah says, after the year, the Mishnah says, even though the rabbis made a gezeira, they didn't make the gezeira to be instituted after the year. And then the din goes back to the basic din, that as soon as she's in Arusa, she's allowed to eat truma. So, call mashma lon. So the chiddush over here of our Mishnah is that li'olam means that even in a scenario where it's more than a year, our Mishnah disagrees with the Mishnah Rishona that we find in Daf Nun Zayin. And why then will we have the Mishnah on Daf Nun Zayin if our Mishnah contradicts it? So The answer is that Mishnah Rishona ain't a Zazim im Koma. Once we have a Mishnah that was codified, so even though we subsequently don't pass it like it, we don't take it out of the context of being a Mishnah, and we just have our Mishnah to show us that that Mishnah is not the way that we pass it. When Rebbe arranged the Mishnayas, so he put in our Mishnah, Leolam, to teach us this din, that under all circumstances, until there's Nisuin, she's not allowed to go and eat the Truma, even though the Raisa she can, but the Rabbi's Gezerah is instituted even after the 1 year period of time is up. Not like the Mishnah on Nun Zayin that says that that Gzeirah is self-ending at 1 year. After 1 year, she's allowed to go back to the Din Daraisa and eat Truma, even though she's not yet a Nisua. Then we said in our Mishnah, if Masar Ab L'Shulchei Ba, once the father hands her over to the Shluchim of the Baal, or the father's Shluchim hands her over to Shluchim of the Baal, so then, Harehi B'Rishus HaBaal V'Chuli, then she falls under the Rishus of the husband. Now the Gemara says, Amar Rav, Rav tells us, Misirasa, this handing over prior to Nisuin is lakol. For all dinim, she is now in the rishus of the husband, with one exception. Chutz, the exception being mitruma. Rav holds, like our understanding of the Mishnah Leolam, that says that in regards to being in the rishus of the Baal, she's now in the rishus of the Baal, but not in regards to eating truma. In regards to eating truma, it's only after the Nisuin that she's entitled to eat truma. That gezerah remains in place up until the time of the Nisuin, even though she's technically already in the rishus of the Baal prior to the Nisuin. However, Ravasi disagrees with Rav. Ravasi omar afla truma. Ravasi says, no, even in regards to truma, we go, in fact, and say that this woman is considered to be in the rishus of her Baal and her new husband, and even though they haven't had Nisuin, the gzeirah from the rabbis expires as soon as she's handed over to the rishus of the husband, even in regards to Truma. So Machlokas, Rav and Ravasi, does she or does she not have the entitlement to eat Truma once she's given over to the rishus of the Baal, even prior to Nisuin? More questions, Ravasi. Eisvei Rav Huna l'Ravasi. Rav Huna asks Ravasi the following shaila. Others say it wasn't Rav Huna, it was Rav's son. Barmilo Chia Bar Rav said this question to Rav Asi. So it was either Rav's, one of his major Talmidim, Rav Huna, or it was his son, Chia Bar Rav. He named his son after his famous uncle, Rabbi Chia. And either he was the one that asked this to Rav Asi. One of the two asked this to Rav Asi. When it says in our Mishnah, Le'olam hi b'rishus ha'av, ashet tikonis l'chuppah, that she remains in the rishus of the father until she enters into the chuppah, that seems to imply, exactly like Rav, it says, until tikkanes l'chuppah, until she enters into the chuppah, and not, like you're saying, until she enters into his rishus. So this statement seems to go against you, Ravasi, and seems to support Rav. So Amalu Rav. So Rav tells either his son, Chia, or his Talmud, Rav Huna, that's how Rashi understands Amalu, who's he talking to? So Rav tells him, when you're bringing this Mishnah down, so you have a problem, because they, meaning Ravasi, could interpret it in the totally opposite way that you interpreted it. And didn't I tell you, Lava Minulchu, didn't I teach you that Lo Tezlu Bosar Ifcha, don't go and bring Uriah, as Rashi says in Dibra Masa, Lo Tezlu Bosar Ifcha, Lo Toshivu, the Beis HaMedrash, don't go and schlug somebody up in the Beis HaMedrash, Mi Mishnah, from a Mishnah, HaNehefeches, the Shnei Tzadim. They could be darshaned and learned in a different way than you're learning it, because you're basically providing them the answer. You're learning it this way, and they'll say, well, we learn it that way. So therefore, this that you brought down, that it says, La'olam hi b'rishus ha'av, achet ikonis l'chuppah, could be understood by Rav Asi in exactly the opposite way that you're understanding it. You're understanding it means until the actual Nisuin takes place, but Rav Asi is going to understand it, Yochel l'shenuri l'chu, he could understand it and teach it to you, that misirasa, this handing it over to the husband, Zuhi kinisasa l'chupa. That is what it means, kinisasa l'chupa. It doesn't literally mean kinisasa l'chupa. It means handing over to the Rishus of the Ab. So therefore, your raya against Rav Asi, he'll turn it around and say, no, it's a raya to me. In any event, those are the opinions of Rav and Rav Asi. Again, Rav says, not for Truma. Only Truma is eaten after the Nisuin. And Rav Asi says, no, as soon as it's in the Rishus of, she's in the Rishus of the husband, so then she can even eat Truma. We now have the opinion of Shmuel. Shmuel Amar Li Rishosa. That statement that she's handed over into Rishus of her new husband, so that in what regard is she now in the Rishus of the new husband? It's only Li Rishosa. It's only in terms of inheritance. As Rashi says, Hu de Mahanya Mesira, this affects her being in the Rishus of the husband, that if Rachmanu Lislan Shin Meso Baderech, if she dies before the Chuppah, nevertheless, Baal Yoresh Nidunyasa. The husband will go and be entitled to all the Nidunya that her father had put in. And Rashi says, the Afal Gadol Amar, even though we're going to learn on Daf Nut Gimel, Ishto Arusa Mesa Eino Yarsha, the husband under normal circumstances doesn't inherit his wife, the Nidunya, unless there's Nisuyin. Here it's different. Hacha, Kivan de Masra, since the father handed her over to the Rishus of the husband, Ahule Ochel Av Mehashta. The father is basically saying, the Nidunya is yours, I'm giving up any rights to Nidunya, I'm handing over my daughter to you, the Nisuyin will take place whenever it will take place, a month from now, a week from now, whatever, and I'm giving you the Nidunya as of this point in time. Because Machmas Kiruv Nisuyin, because of the love he wants to engender in his son-in-law. However, Abul Truma, but Shmuel is saying in regards to Truma, or Ula HaFaris Nidorah, in order to be made for the Nidorim by himself, Shalom B'Shutvis, that without having to ask the father to also be made for the Nidor, or Lumitziyasa, any findings that she has, the Eina El Mishum Eva, those are instituted in order that the husband shouldn't have a hatred towards his wife. Hey, I have to support her, but I don't care to Mitzios. I have to support her, and I'm not able to be made for her Nidorim, so that Akati Lecha Lamecha Shlohochi. Those situations, we don't say that they take effect until the chuppah. So Shmuel's opinion is, the only thing that we say when we say she goes over to the shus of the husband, when the father hands her over to either the Baal or the shluchim of the Baal, that's only in regards to Yerusha, that now the husband would inherit her if Rachman al-Islam, she died before the chuppah. Reish Lakish Omar Liksubasa. Reish Lakish says, no, the one thing that it means when she's handed over into the shus of the husband, it's in regards to the ksuba. What does it mean? The Gemara says, "Ksubasa mahi." What exactly is Reish Lakish telling us that only in regards to the ksuba is she now entitled? The husband now is entitled to get the ksuba, but not the other things like eating truma. So the Gemara says, "Ksubasa mahi." What does this mean too? If you're going to tell me the meiso yaris law, if you're going to tell me what if she dies that he's entitled to get the nedunya that was put into the ksuba, so then hainu shmuel. Then what is Reish Lakish arguing with Shmuel? And then he's saying the exact same thing with Shmuel. So one says, you're right, that's not what Reish Lakish is saying. On Ravina, Reish Lakish is explained by Ravina as follows. Lomar, ksubasa me'acher mona, that the next time, if this husband were to die or divorce her before the Nisuin, the fact that she was handed over into Rizushus means that her next ksuba, even though she's a basula, is only going to be a mona, as if she was a married woman who is an amana or a grusha, that would be only entitled the next time to a ksuv of a money. So even though there was no nisuin, once she's in the rishus of the husband, so then her next ksuba, should this marriage end before the nisuin, would still only be a money. So these are all the different opinions we wrote down, Rav, Ravasi, Shmuel, and Reish Lakish. And the Gemara says, we have two more opinions right now, Rav Yochanan, Rabbi Chanina. They also had an opinion over here. What does it mean, handed over into Rishus of the husband? The Amri Tavayu, Mesirasa, Lakol, Ath Latruma. So Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Yochanan, they hold the Gravasi, and it says that this being in the Rishus of the husband is for everything, even Truma. So we again have Gravasi, now Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Chanina, that all say that the Mesira into the husband's Rishus includes even the wife's ability now to go to the basic din, is that she's entitled to eat truma, and the rabbinical decree not to eat truma goes away once she's in the rishus of the husband. Gemara questions, it says, Meisvei, halach ha'av im shluchei ha'bal. If the father accompanies the shluchim of the Baal, so in other words, he hasn't fully handed her over to the husband's rishus, or oshochu shluchei ha'av im shluchei ha'bal, or even if he didn't go, but his shluchim went, so that's not called yet giving her over into the rishus of the husband. Now that we have in the Mishnah, but the Braisa that we're now bringing down continues. This Meisvei continues with the following. Or if the Kala, this woman, owns property on the way. So she's still in her domain by going into her property. And she goes with him on the road. They're traveling back to his house and they stay overnight in her property. Obviously in a kosher way. He sleeps in his area, she sleeps in her area. We're not talking about any Rahman al-Islam inappropriate behavior going on, but it's still in her property. So we say that that's not l'nisuin. They're not together to make a chuppah essentially over here. They just, this is a way to rest on the way to travel back to his house. In all of these situations, even though the Nidunya was handed over already to the husband, he already has it in his possession, Nevertheless, Mesa, if Rachmana Litzlan, this Kala dies before the Nisuin, Avia Yarsha, the father still is entitled to get back that Nadunya, because that's not called being handed over into the Rishon of Baal, and therefore the husband has to give back the Nadunya to the father. However, if the father, in fact, handed over to Shluchim and the Baal, or Shemas Shluchi Avu Shluchi Baal, or his Shluchim handed her over to the Shluchim and the Baal, or he has a house on the road, he has a courtyard or a house on the way, and they go into that with the purposes of Nisuin in mind, even though they didn't consummate the marriage. In this situation, even though the Nadunya that was promised in the Ksuba has not yet been handed over from the father to the Baal, nevertheless, in this situation, if Rachman al-San Mesa, she dies before the Nisuin, Baal Yorsha. In this situation, the husband does have the right to get the Nadunya from the father, even though it hasn't been, the Nadunya is not in his possession. But since she's considered to have come under his domain, in his Rishos, so he's now entitled to the Nadunya. Under what circumstances are we talking about? So the Brisa states this is only in regards to Yerusha. In other words, the husband inherits his wife in this situation. Abu le truma, but to eat truma, still not allowed. Here, even though she's clearly in his Rishus, he inherits her at this point in time. He gets the Nadunya, but she's not allowed to eat Truma at this point in time, exactly like Shmuel said, and Akasha on Rav Asi, Rav Yochanan, and Rav Chanina. So Gemara says, Tiyofta, Dekulu, Tiyofta. This, in fact, slugs up those three Amoraim's opinion, who says that she is entitled to have Truma at that point in time, even before the Nisuin. So this Brisa, those are all great Amoraim, but they don't argue normally with the Brisa. So the Brisa trumps their Amoraic opinion, and therefore this is a Tiyofta. This slugs them up. More continues and says, Hagufakasha, this Brisa though has an internal contradiction. The Brisa says, Amris Nichnosi Mololin, if she enters into her house with him, her courtyard with him, just to rest on the way to go, so that implies it's only that because they went in there just to rest, time of the Lolin. However, the implication is, Hostama, if they didn't say specifically to rest, then it would be L'shem Nisuin, and then he would, in fact, have now made her into an Nisua, even though they didn't consummate the marriage. So the implication from the ratio of the Brisa is that it's only because they went in there to rest, Lolin, and not Nisuim, that it doesn't count as Nisuim. But if they went in Stam, so it would count as Nisuim. But then that seems to be internally contradicted by the Sefer of the Brisa. And the Sefer, it says, Nichlasa imo l'shem Nisuim. It's only if they went into his house, now we're talking the second part, that it's the husband's house, the courtyard that they went into, and it was l'shem chuppah, l'shem Nisuim. That is only in that situation that she's considered fully in his domain. Implication being, Hostama, if they just went in, even though it's his property, then we view it lolin, as if they went in there just to rest, and it's not considered chuppah. So the ratio, the implication is that unless you specifically state it's lolin, the implication is that it's chuppah. But in the same, it says, unless you specifically said it's not lolin, if you said it's l'shem nisuin, then it's nisuin. But the implication is, stam, it's lolin. So the Gemara says, how do you reconcile this on Ravashi? Stam or stomik tani? No, it didn't say either of those words. It didn't say Nichlasa imo lolin. It just said Nichlasa imo. And it didn't say Nichlasa imo l'shem nisuin. It just said Nichlasa imo. In both situations, it was the two of them just going together. And what we learn over here is Stam chotzer didor lolin, Stam chotzer didei l'nisuin. That when we break it up into what the din is, so it depends. When they just go in there, Stam, there is no implication. But we say that it was her house or chotzer, so then stam, it's lulin. If it was his house or chotzer, then the stam position is that it's l'shem nisuin. And therefore, there's no stira internally between the reisha and the sefer of this price. Trying to learn another price. If the father hands over his daughter to the shluchim of the Baal, and then Nebuch, the zinsa, and this girl, Nebuch, commits adultery while she's now in the, quote, rishus of her husband, even though there's no chuppah yet, so one would have thought that maybe she's still considered a Nara Murasa, Harezu Bechenek. So the punishment is not the special punishment of Skila for a Nara Murasa. She's considered already as a married woman. And Rachmon Lassan, a married woman, is certainly not allowed to commit Znus. And if she commits adultery, so the punishment is Misa, but the Misa is Chenek and not the higher level Misa of Skila. So the Gemara says, how do you know this? So Amar Rabbi Ami Bar Chama, Rabbi Ami Bar Chama says, it's based upon the following pasuk. It says, Amar Kora, the pasuk says, I read you the whole pasuk before we get to the part that the Gemara mentions. Votziu es hanaro el pesach beisovia uskalu. We had this the other day. They, in this situation, which is an hanaro murasa, they bring it to her father's house because they want to show him, this is the girl that you raised, this is the type of daughter that you raised, and they give her skill over there. The Ansha'ira give her skill over there, Babonim. But Mason, and then she'll die. Ki asa, so why? Because she did this terrible thing, Nivola b'Yisrael. What was the terrible thing that she did? Liznos beis avia. It's only when she is considered beis avia that this nus is punishable by skila. Prat, as opposed to the Gemara says, l'shamasa rav l'shulchei baal. Once she's handed over to the Shulchei baal, it's no longer called that she did this Nivola, liznos beis avia. It's now called that she was a regular woman who committed adultery, Rachmana Litzlan, terrible crime, and both she and her adulterer will be given not skila, but chedek. Agamor says maybe the Ema, this pasuk, liznos beis avia, is prat shenichnas l'chuppah v'lo nivala. Maybe it only means to teach us the din that even though she had chuppah, but if she didn't have be'ila, if they didn't consummate the marriage, so in that situation, if she, Rachmana Litzlan, goes and commits adultery, in that situation she gets chenek. But in the situation that we're describing, where she's still a Nar Murasa, she didn't go into Nisuin, maybe she should get skila. So I'm a Rav. Rav says, no. Amali Ami, the Amora Ami told me, Chuppah behed yoksiva. We already know the din of chuppah from the pasuk, Liznos beis avia, because the pasuk says, Kie Nara Besula me'orasa le'ish. It says that if a woman is a Besula who is an Arusa, so what does that mean? Nara, it tells us the word Nara to teach us that it's only a Nara below Bogaris. This din of Nara Murasa doesn't apply if she reaches the age of Bogaris, of 12 years old and 6 months. Besula, it means it can't be a Beula, that she can't have had relations. So in that situation, if she previously was not a Besula, so then the din of Nara Hamurasa doesn't apply for Skila. And when it says Meorasa, that tells us that even though she hasn't had relations, but if she's a Nesua, the din doesn't apply. So here we see Meorasa v'lo Nesua. So this is where Ami taught Rav the din, that we already know that if she's gone to the chuppah but hasn't had relations, the marriage wasn't consummated, but she's a Nesua, so the din of Nara Meorasa for Skila doesn't apply. So we already know that din. So therefore, we can use the pasuk Liznos beis avia to tell us that if she was just handed over into the reshus of the husband, even though she's still a Meorasa, not a Nesua, nevertheless, the din of skila doesn't apply, the din of chedek applies. So Rava says what I just said outside, now Rava says it inside. My nesu, what does it mean nesu over here? Elam and nesu mamish, you're telling me that they consummated the marriage, so then it already says, hainu besula v'lo bula. So we already know that if she's consummated the marriage, then the din of Naram Rasa doesn't apply. Elalab, mustn't it be? She nechtas ol chuppah v'lo nivala. It must be the case that I just said, where she enters into the chuppah but didn't have relations, didn't consummate the marriage. And we've already learned from this pasuk, he had Nara b'sula morasa l'ish, that din doesn't apply to Nara morasa to her anymore, even though she has not been a be'ula. She didn't consummate the marriage after Nisuim. So therefore, I can use the pasuk, Liznos beis avia, to teach us this din. This is a good break point, so we'll stop over here, right at the beginning of the next Amud, with this we conclude today's shiur.